Suns can do a little celebrating with a W here. In it goes to Bledsoe. 5 seconds. Bledsoe with three. Bledsoe with one. Got to put it up for the game. Good! He did it! Eric Bledsoe at the buzzer.
The Solar Panel, a weekly Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. We are PHX.
On this podcast, we have spent a couple of different episodes talking about stat padding, and there was one particular stat padding that happened at the end of the regular season that I want to run both by you, Espo, as well as you, Mr. Dave King. So by going...
The guy who lives up to his name. We'll deal with that later.
By going a perfect 0-0 on three-point attempts in the final game of the season for the Portland Trailblazers, Mo Harkless qualified himself for his $500,000 contract bonus for shooting at least 35% on three-point attempts. If he would have missed one three-pointer in that game, he would have lost that $500,000 bonus. So I ask you, gentlemen, should that be something that NBA players keep in mind on the last game of the regular season, whether or not they're going to get a bonus, and maybe they don't shoot a three, even though they're wide open?
Hell yeah, especially if you're in a position like the Portland Trailblazers where their playoff spot was locked up. Yeah, why not make sure you get your money? If the team's going to be going to put that in your contract, they've got to understand that one of the side effects may be that you might not shoot a three-pointer in the final game because you want to preserve that money. I am all for a guy getting his, especially if it doesn't affect the team in a negative way. Good on Mo Harkless. And if any Phoenix Sun did it, I'd applaud them too.
Yeah, in fact, it's quite possible that one or two of the Phoenix Suns had something like that, and I can totally see Earl Watson feeding toward that. We saw Earl trying, not that hard, but trying a little bit to try to get Tyler Ulis that triple-double last week, and we obviously saw him trying to get 70 points for Devin Booker or as many points as possible. So I think there is value in, obviously, players trying to go for those things. Speaking of 70-point games, there two of the other 70-point scorers in league history scored their 70-point games just to win their scoring title that year. Whether that had anything to do with their contract or not, I don't know for sure. But players do this all the time. I think it's great. And in fact, if I'm the coach of the Portland Trailblazers, I'd have walked up to Mo Harkless and told him, don't shoot a three tonight. Slash every time you get the ball and tell my point guards, don't pass him the ball behind the three-point line.
And you are listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Sun show, part of the Almighty Baller Radio. You can find us on Twitter as well as on Facebook at Sun Solar Panel. So one of the things we like to do every single week, and first I want to toss this over to you, Greg, because we had such a great reaction from it, is that when you guys leave us a five-star review, it really does help the podcast. And Greg, tell me a little bit about why we saw such an influx in reviews this week.
Oh, first off, actually, let me take a second here. I want to say hello to our listeners on Dash Radio. We are happy to be here, glad to be part of it. If you listen to us on the podcast, make sure to download the Dash Radio app. We're part of the Almighty Baller Radio there now, so happy to be there. Just wanted to get that out of the way, say hello to the new listeners, and then to let the old listeners know and the new listeners. Yeah, I made a little offer last week. I got a Phoenix Suns prize closet after years of being a fan and a team employee. I've accumulated, let's just say, a lot of Suns crap. And the wife wants me to clean out said prize closet. So the best way to do that, I got an ultimatum for you guys. If you go to iTunes, you leave us a rating. I don't care what kind of rating. Just leave us a rating. Send me or the show on Twitter a tweet with a photo of proving you subscribe to the show and your review. I'm gonna consider opening the prize closet and sending you something. Last week we gave away a Suns draft hat. This week I've got a piece of the court from the early 2000s that's got a nice little plaque on it. I'll send that your way if we read your review next week. We saw a nice little increase in these reviews. So let's keep doing it. Let's have some fun. And I told you, if we get to 100 reviews by the end of the summer, actually, let's make this a little tougher. If we get to 500 reviews by the end of the summer, I got a pair of authentic 1992-93 Suns shorts. I mentioned it last week on the pod. I will randomly select somebody that that has tweeted us with those parameters and give them those authentic shorts. So if we get to 500, that's what we'll do.
500. That is a lofty goal. And you know what? I should say, Greg, that's a really great point. I forgot this is our first episode on Dash. And so I forgot to say hello to everybody listening on Dash. I also forgot to introduce you two gentlemen. I am not doing my job this morning. We have Dave.
No,
King.
I don't even know what you're talking. I mean, wait till we read that review that Greg's going to do on the air. You're totally not living up to that.
Seriously. We have Dave King, the managing editor, Bright Side of the Sun. We have Mr. Greg Esposito. And Greg, you can follow him on Twitter at Espo. He is a former Suns post-game radio host and current columnist of Sports 360 AZ. And the review we're going to read this week is by Patio. It's a 5-star review on iTunes. And the title of the review is Espo Should Be in the Podcast Hall of Fame. And
the review was that a pause for laughter?
just wanted to take a look at your beautiful eyes as I said that, Mr. Greg. And the review says, is there such a thing? He's really funny and brutally honest, which is great. Tim's a great moderator for the panel. Dave lives up to his name, Dave. Thanks for the podcast, Greg Esposito.
Finally, I've perfected writing our own reviews, and I'm glad this one finally got it right. Hall of Fame. I think that's where I belong. I don't know which Hall of Fame. I highly doubt it's the podcast Hall of Fame, and we know it's not the basketball Hall of Fame, but some Hall of Fame probably deserves me.
I got to tell you, Dave, that was a really glowing review of your contribution to the podcast so far. Living up to your name. And Dave's a great name. Dave's my middle name. So I think he was saying really nice things about you.
Dave is a really great name. I'm proud of that name. Not many people have that name. So if I can live up to it at any point in my life, I feel like I've accomplished something.
Did you just say not many people have the name Dave? Now I got to look this up. How many Daves are in the world? I'm actually Googling this as we speak. I'm hoping to, of course, they don't have an easy one, but there was actually a poet.
Wait, which is more popular, Greg? Variations of Greg or variations of Dave? That's what I want to know.
Both are pretty bland, but honestly, this, in all seriousness, when I Google how many Daves are in the world, Dr. Seuss wrote a poem called Too Many Daves. I'm not kidding. So there you go. That's your fun fact for the day. Do you guys realize we've hardly talked any Suns, and we're like 4 hours into this thing already?
We talk more about ourselves than the Suns. Sorry, fans. Sorry, listeners.
That's about right for this time of year, I think.
But you know what we probably definitely haven't talked about enough yet, and that is the fact that Eric Bledsoe is coming on the podcast. We're going to have Eric Bledsoe coming up right after this.
Extremely excited to welcome in Phoenix Suns guard and my friend Eric Bledsoe to the show. Eric, how are you, man?
I'm good. So how you doing, man?
I've been good. You know, before we get into talking basketball and the season and everything, I'm a new dad. I know you're a dad. What is it like as an NBA player when the season comes to an end and you know you're going to get to spend some time with your kids?
Oh, that's a blessing, man. Even when the season is in, you know, kids never know. You know what's no going on, and they always, you know, there to, you know, greet you with a smile or, you know, happy to see you. You know, it's genuine love, so, you know, that's the thing I love about it.
Yeah, well, you had a great season. You had career highs in points and assists this year, second highest rebounding totals that you've ever had. What did you attribute your success to this year?
You know, hard work and my family. You know, Earl, you know, my teammates, you know, I had this life coach, you know, Coach Dar. You know, I had, you know, a lot of, you know, people, a great circle around me, you know, pretty much. And, you know, I stayed dedicated and hard work.
Well, you mentioned Coach Earl Watson. How big of an impact in his first year did he have on you and the team as a whole?
It was phenomenal. He believed in everybody. He gave, you know, everybody confidence. He stayed on guys, to get the best out of them. Like, even though we weren't, winning, everybody still played, extremely hard for him. So, that's all you can ask for, and it goes on beyond that. He's, great, off-court guy as well.
Well, did you feel this was your best season in your NBA career so far?
Yeah, because I stayed healthy pretty much. last year I was having a great year as well, but my season got ended short. I guess you can say that.
You know my stance on this question, but I need to know and need to hear it from you. Did you think you should have been an All-Star this year?
Without a question. I definitely thought so, but, there's a lot of, pros and cons that comes with it. That stuff you got to live with. Only thing you can do is, push forward. That's what I'm going to continue to do.
Is that a big career goal for you, is to become an All-Star?
Oh, of course. Of course. I definitely want to be one, someday. But I feel like I'm already one. I don't need appearance to, tell me I'm not. I feel like I'm already one.
All right. Excellent. You brought up the life coach. Now, I know that the Suns, over the last couple of off seasons, have asked you to focus on leadership and becoming a more vocal leader and a bigger leader for the team. How big of an impact did the life coach have on you? And do you feel like you fulfilled that leadership that the front office was looking for?
No question. I thought I did a great job this season of being a great leader, as far as not taking plays off, getting on guys, in certain situations, not in a bad way, but also in a positive way. And just try to go out there each and every day and, help my team, win games.
How big of a part of that leadership was mentoring young guys like Tyler Ulis and Devin Booker, and how much have you embraced that part of what the Suns have asked you to do?
Tremendous. You could tell how they ended the season off. This is definitely one of the seasons for the books. We got players that growed up, at the end of the year. Not even playing, but being great professionals as well.
How many of those 70 points that Devin Booker scored should we attribute to you and that mentorship?
Zero. Zero. Them hard-earned, plays he went out there and made every bucket. We was just, on the sideline cheering them on. That was something special to see and watch.
The team took a lot of grief, we'll say, for to put it nicely, in terms of helping Devin get to 70 in that game, and teammates like you supporting it and celebrating it throughout the game. Do you think that was fair, the criticism you guys took?
People criticize every day about the smallest thing. You could do the slightest thing, wrong, they're going to criticize you about it, even if you do something right. But we was happy, he went out there and played, his tail off like that, and, became part of history. I was extremely happy, with him not, selling.
It was a tough season in certain ways, and I got to ask you about this, but in March 12th was your last game before management decided to sit you. Was there a conversation that you had with Ryan McDonough and the front office and Earl Watson prior to this? Was this something that you were okay with?
No, of course not. I don't think any player would be okay with it. But this, at the end of the day, I got to be professional. I've been in this league a while, and, I don't want to, had no bad reputation. And, I thought I did a great job of, handling it the best way possible. Putting in, great work, that's going to contribute to the, the summer, that's going to, carry over to, the season again next summer. Hopefully we won't have this situation again.
Did it hurt your relationship at all with the front office and Coach Watson?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, you look at the future. What do you see for this Phoenix Suns team and this young core? What do you think is the ceiling for these guys?
I mean, the sky's the limit, man. Who knows? Who knows, man? If they continue to work and, continue to, grow with each other and learn from each other and, pretty much do things, with each other, I think the sky's the limit.
Well, talking about the future, there's a lot of rumors out there. Do you think you're going to be part of this future moving forward this summer?
All I could do is prepare for next summer. That's what I'm going to do. Nothing's going to stop me from getting better. It's a tough situation, both sides, but at the end of the day, it's still basketball to be played. I got a lot of basketball to play. And, whatever happens, happens. It's not going to stop me from, try to reach the goals I want to reach. And, is winning a championship.
Is it tough knowing that the Suns are in line for a top two pick in this draft and the top two guys are point guards that everybody's talking about?
You said what?
Well, with the Suns in line to get the one or two pick in this draft and the top two talented guys on everybody's mock drafts are point guards. Is that tough to know that, seeing as that's your position?
I was making sure I heard you right.
No problem.
I mean, I don't care. I don't care. They can take whoever they want to take. But, at the end of the day, I got to control what I can control. That's when I'm on the court, each and every night, giving them my all, in front of, my family, the organization I'm playing for, so forth and so on, the fans and everything. So, that's all I can control.
If you don't happen to return, what do you hope that Suns fans remember about your time here and who you are as a player?
Just like I gave my all, when I came out there and played, like I said, gave 110%, I left it all out there on the court.
All right. And then I got to ask you, any big summer plans? You doing anything fun with the family to get away? It can't all be working out. I know everybody'd like to think that's all players do, but I'm sure you're going to do something fun.
For sure not. Yeah, I'm going on vacation with my family. Nice. I definitely got to get them some quality time. They deserve it. They had to sacrifice, a lot for me. And, that's pretty much time. So, it's definitely, giving that time back to them.
You get to head home to Alabama, too, and see all the family there, too?
Oh, yeah. I got to see my mom, my brothers and sisters, friends, I still, got to focus.
Well.
Giving the time to my family, my wife. Our beautiful kids, and all that.
Well, Bled, man, I always appreciate the time. I'm always a fan, and I always appreciate what you give to this city and what you've done for me as well. So thanks again for taking the time, and I hope you have a great off season, man.
Oh, man, thank you, Expo. Miss you around here.
Yeah, I miss being there, and I hope we can catch up soon, man.
All right, man.
All right.
We are PHX.
So what you just heard right there, really exciting for the Sun Solar Panel. Mr. Greg Esposito interviewing Eric Bledsoe. And I got to tell you, so if you want to watch a video to that, you can go to sunspodcast.com and it's right there at the top. But Greg, I was really watching the video of that. I got really distracted by your eyes and your face the entire time that I could hardly even listen to it because I was just staring at you.
I'm getting a little creeped out. That's the second time you've mentioned my eyes in this podcast. All right. If my eyes are so distracting you, we're not going to Skype while we record this stuff anymore. All right.
I have you watched the video? It's very distracting. Because when Eric Bledsoe responds, you kind of nod and sometimes you'll smile. And it's just like, it's really distracting.
I'm not posting the video anymore. Everybody in this world is just getting the audio of this interview, and you will like it that way, all right?
I have to watch the video. Yeah. I have to know if I'm distracted. So, definitely.
I call Tim the Walmart version of Gordon Hayward, and he keeps complimenting my eyes. I don't know what's going on in this episode.
Meanwhile, I'm just over here with my old shriveled up self just watching you guys banter back and forth.
You're just Dave. That's what we've determined. Can we talk about the actual interview and less about me now, please?
But it was great. You have to watch the video. It's so good.
I will.
All right. Let me ask you guys, because my read on this, and thank you to Eric Bledsoe for taking time out of his day, and I hope over the offseason we'll be able to get different members of the Suns front office, maybe coaching staff and some other players, but it was really nice to have Bled as the first member from the organization on the show. But to me, by the end, I really felt like he was a guy that was kind of resigned to the fact that he probably is done here in Phoenix. He didn't say it in so many words, but he just felt like that. I'd loved your thoughts on this, Tim, since I know I slightly distracted you with the video of it, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on
it. I thought it was really interesting that at one point you asked, do you care if they take, like, who they take? And he's like, nah, I don't care. But I also, the part where he was talking about where he was just trying to be professional, you know, even though it did bother him, but he just had to act like a professional because other teams see that. And I felt like that was a really telling admittance on him getting benched, you know, partway through the season.
Well, and his response when I ask, you know, were you bothered by it? Well, hell yeah, was what comes out of his mouth. Or heck yeah, I don't remember the exact wording, but emphatically, yes, he was upset about being benched. I mean, you got to wonder. I just, to me, it is frustrating to a certain point because he's a guy that did everything that that the front office had asked him to do. I mean, to the point we've talked about it before, and he mentioned it in the interview. He went and got a life coach to try to make him a better leader and do those things. He tried to embrace being a mentor to these young guys, even when it meant he was being shut down. I mean, and this is a guy that has and made it very clear all-star aspirations. He wants to be an all-star in this league. He tweeted about how he can't wait to be in the playoffs and playing as part of it. I feel bad because he's done everything they've asked. And really, I think the only reason that the Suns would move on from him at this point is simply they just don't feel like the rest of these young guys are going to be good enough soon enough where he can be part of that next great Suns team. And if they do deal him, I really hope it's to a team that he can have a major impact on in a way that PJ Tucker is going to have a chance to do that in the playoffs this year, because there isn't a guy who deserves it more, who's a harder worker, a nicer guy. Eric Bledsoe deserves every opportunity he can get.
Absolutely. Let me share a couple of my thoughts on this. I think Eric Bledsoe does the best he possibly can. I think as you elaborated on, Greg, he's done everything he can to become the best player he is. And really, he still is one of the top five or six overall all-around best players. He's one of the one of only five, I believe, averaging his points, assists, and rebounds on the year. And then you throw in the steals and his ability to play incredible defense when he's focused and when he has a purpose. Then definitely the guy is a very, very, very good player. However, as the lead point guard on a team that is centered on the guards being the guys who initiate all the plays, you've got a guy who should be averaging more than 6.3 assists in that offense. Jared Dudley said it the other day, and this is absolutely not a slight on Bledsoe at all, but it is an observation that Dudley said, look, if you've got Bledsoe and Booker playing 35, 38, 34 minutes a game, and they're only getting you a total of 11 assists or 10 assists in the game, that's just not good enough. The Suns have to get better at distributing the ball. And I'm not sure if Eric Bledsoe is much more of a distributor than we've seen. He certainly stepped it up this year. We certainly saw better playmaking in January and February and early March than we had seen in his career prior. And that's a really good sign for him going forward. But I'm not sure he's the natural floor leader, pass-first guy that this kind of young team of finishers needs. I mean, you've got two of the best dunkers in the NBA, and Marquese Chris and Derrick Jones Jr. You've got Devin Booker, who can catch and shoot with the best of them, but he didn't catch enough in position to take shots this year, shots on the wing. You've got Dragan Bender and Marquese Chris, who can stand on the wing and catch and shoot. This offense seems to be screaming for a pass first point guard, and I'm not sure if Eric Bledsoe is the best fit for this roster. So I'll go with you, Greg, and I'll say that Bledsoe can be a huge difference maker. I've always thought on a team like a Cleveland, for example, I think he would be a better fit than Kyrie Irving on that team next to LeBron James and a Kevin Love, because he doesn't have to be the focal point on offense. He can be a killer on defense and you know, help facilitate an offense. In a triangle offense, that kind of thing, he could be really, really great in that kind of offense. But as a lead guard, pass first, he's just not that kind of guy. And so maybe the Suns do need to move on.
Well, my problem here is you're talking about an offense. The coach develops the offense. If you have certain pieces and quality pieces at that, like Eric Bledsoe, why are you not developing the offense around these players' strong suits? And then you get a guy like Dragan Bender, who is a big man that can pass very well. Like, there's just, to me, if you've got an all-star caliber point guard and you build an offense around him that doesn't work to his strengths, that's on the coach as much as it is on the player.
Well, but it's also it's also the rest of the roster, Greg. I mean, you're talking about, Dragan Bender could be a secondary playmaker. Well, the dude's the youngest guy in the league, and he missed half the season for injury, and he's not quite ready to be in an offense, but to be the leader in an offense. But really, if you look back, Eric Bledsoe's had several different rosters around him, and every year he's gotten better. He's putting up career numbers. So you can't hold it against Earl Watson that Eric Bledsoe put up the best numbers of his career, and yet he's saddled with a roster that is very, naturally selfish. It's an age thing. Jared Dudley was saying it the other day in exit interviews. He was saying, look, we need more unselfish players. He didn't mean that the guys on the roster right now are selfish. He just meant that the guys on the roster right now are not versatile enough to be unselfish, because being unselfish means you know how to play the game. You know where everyone else on the court is going to be. You know who's going to cut, who's going to use the screen that's being thrown, who's not going to use the screen that's being thrown, who's going to reverse the screen. You know all these things. Well, that's a veteran, and you need more unselfish veterans out there on the team, and this roster is not built for that. So I'm not going to say that Earl Watson is a savant on offense, because he certainly is not. But he did make the most out of what he was given, I thought, this year, putting guys in position to shoot and score. And all I'm saying is, going forward, I see, I guess I'm probably biased in the Steve Nash history here. I'd rather see somebody who is going to be pass first, is going to put the lobs up there, is going to set up guys for shots. And that's probably not Eric Bledsoe's best game.
So do you think legitimately, and Tim, hop in on this too, we don't want to exclude you completely out of this, but do you think this team is better with Markelle Fultz or Lonzo Ball in the next 2 years than they are with Eric Bledsoe?
Well, it depends what you mean by better. I'm kind of in Dave's camp, where what I value out of a point guard is a playmaker, but that is sort of dependent upon the roster around them. And if you look at the Suns roster right now, and depending on what they do in the draft, you have Devin Booker, who can handle the ball a little bit, to your guys' points. Dragan Bender looks like he's going to be able to pass the ball a little bit. So I do think that the Suns could be better suited with a playmaking point guard as opposed to a scoring one.
So then you're leaning toward Ball.
Okay, so it's really hard going into this draft, right? I'm worried about Markelle Fultz's defense. I'm worried about Lonzo Ball's father. Josh Jackson seems like a really the kind of guy that you can run a lot of offense through. And if you have a couple of players out there between a Dragan Bender, a Devin Booker, and a Josh Jackson, that you could create a lot of offense without necessarily having to go get a point guard in the draft. But maybe there are some scenarios in which the Suns could get an Aaron DeFox somehow, depending on the pick that they trade Eric Bledsoe for. De'Aaron Fox, yes. Depending on who they trade Bledsoe for. So I do think that there's options out there.
Yeah, no, I do agree. And I'm not trying to say that, and I don't want to put this out there, that I think anybody is better than Eric Bledsoe. I think there's only a handful of guys who could be better than Eric Bledsoe. And I'm not even sure that either of Markelle Fultz or any of the point guards in this draft, including Lonzo Ball, would ultimately be a better player even 3 or 4 years from now than Eric Bledsoe is today. So I'm just saying that Eric Bledsoe may be peaking at where he is right now. And yes, you either build the roster around him to make him look better, or you go with somebody else who can make others look better. If you bring in Alonzo Ball, you're going to have some really fun-looking passing offense. But Alonzo Ball is very limited in his own offensive game. He's almost worse than a Ricky Rubio in terms of being able to create and cause defenses to defend him inside 30 feet out. And so Alonzo's going to have his own problems in the NBA that don't make him a shoo-in for a Hall of Fame career. Markelle Fultz, if you're talking about a Kyrie Irving or an Isaiah Thomas or a Damian Lillard, Markelle Fultz kind of profiles closer to those guys, which is a score first, pass second point guard who can pass and can score and would rather is more suited towards scoring. So then are you just replacing Eric Bledsoe with a younger version than himself that he already is without the pedigree of being a potentially a great defender like he has been prior in his career that a Markelle Fultz won't reach? Do you go for, like a De'Aaron Fox who right now physically profiles kind of like a Russell Westbrook in that at the top end, he could be incredible. But also when Westbrook came out, he could have been just a journeyman athlete also. And Westbrook really made himself the great NBA player that he is, that De'Aaron Fox may never reach anything close to that. He might just be an athletic guy. So I don't know. There aren't any sure things in the draft. But I do think that Greg's first point of there being a difference in the age here, I don't know that the Suns are shooting for the playoffs in the next 2 years, and that's when Eric Bledsoe really needs to be peaking and reaching the playoffs. So I wouldn't mind the Suns doing for Bledsoe like they did for PJ Tucker and putting him on a team that he can have fun right now during the peak of his career before he starts winding down. I think that might be the best for everybody.
So the big question on this episode, and I got a lot of feelings about it. Toss this over to you first, Greg. Who should Suns fans be rooting for during these NBA playoffs?
Oh, well, I've got a whole theory on this. And I got to tell you, there's a system that you have to use to try to determine who you can actually root for as Suns fans. I mean, you can't violate certain laws of being a Suns fan when you're trying to pick who you should root for. And some of those rules are you can't root for anybody who at any point has brutally knocked the Suns out of the playoffs during their history. So let's go through it. That takes out the Spurs, the
Most
Rockets,
everybody.
The Portland Trailblazers, the Boston Celtics, the Chicago Bulls. That all those are off the table, right? So we wipe a lot of the people off right there. You can't have any team from LA. That just can't be allowed. So the Clippers are gone. I say if a team's beaten you in a coin toss for one of the greatest players of all time in NBA history, can't root for them in the playoffs. So the Milwaukee Bucks are gone, right? If a team has a former disgruntled player of the Suns on their roster, you can't root for them. So Washington and Cleveland are now gone. So we're left with Toronto, Indiana.
Oh, Boston has to be gone too, right?
Well, Boston was gone because they beat the Suns in the 76 finals. They're double whammy. They would have been gone either way. So you've got Indiana left. You've got Toronto left. Atlanta left. And Memphis and OKC. Those are the teams that you have left that you can root for. Now, I'm a big proponent of you can't root for any team that's going to be a thorn in your side for the rest of the decade in terms of the Western Conference. So Golden State, OKC are gone. So it really comes down to Do I feel like rooting for the Atlanta Hawks? No, I can't. I can't root for a Dwight Howard. They're gone. I can't do it. So now I'm looking at Indiana, Toronto, and Memphis. Really, something about Memphis has always rubbed me the wrong way. Plus, they insulted Devin Booker earlier in the year, so I'm throwing Memphis out. So I'm looking at the Pacers or Toronto, and you know what? I'm going with Toronto. I want to go with and support PJ Tucker and his first run in the playoffs. He's one guy that left town, wasn't disgruntled, had glowing things to say about the Suns and their fans, and I want to see him succeed. So as a Phoenix Suns fan, I think everybody should put their support behind the Toronto Raptors. I think that's the team that really deserves our push. And since our slogans are very much alike, and we are PHX and we the North, we the North PHX right now. Let's go for it. Let's just roll with it through the playoffs.
We the North Phoenix.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I had already picked out, I mean, you went through a really long analysis there, Greg. I really appreciate all the effort you put into who you should root for and who you shouldn't. I'd already picked out the Raptors and PJ Tucker. I want to see Tucker succeed. I don't necessarily care if the Raptors go all the way. I don't even care if they win a playoff series. I just want to see PJ Tucker in the playoffs, even if it's only for four games. But I expect it'll be a lot more games than that. The team I'm going to root the most for, though, this year is the Houston Rockets, and let me tell you why. First of all, I've always loved the way D'Antoni coaches. Mike D'Antoni, he's probably going to win Coach of the Year this year. If you'd have ranked coaches before the year started, he might have been in the bottom five because of the bad stints he had with New York and with L.A. After leaving the Suns. But the guy obviously knows how to play away. And when he gets the players who can play that way, he can excel. I love watching James Harden and how he runs that team. I think the Rockets are fun to watch. I think they're going to make for a fun playoffs. And I'm really happy to see the mustachio-less Mike D'Antoni team do well, knowing for sure that they're not going to get past the second round just because they still don't play defense.
Look, you can't root for a team that ripped your heart out twice in the mid-90s. And since you're 78, we know you remember those two series very well. Plus, I cannot support a mustacheless Mike D'Antoni. It is not Mike D'Antoni without the mustache. I cannot do that.
My wife still calls him Pringles when she sees him on TV.
How? If the Pringles guy lost his mustache, I wouldn't buy Pringles anymore. So,
well,
no.
She obviously hasn't watched much of him this year, so she'd probably do the same thing you're doing right now, going, what? He's not even the guy on the Pringles box anymore, so, or the can, I guess it is. So, but still, I'm going to go for the Rockets, and you can't stop me, Greg.
I can. I can just not listen to you.
What about the Jazz, Boris?
I'm just
Diaw.
Trying to live up to my name.
What about the Jazz, Boris Diaw, Joe Johnson? Did you give a reason why we can't root for them?
Yeah, Joe Johnson left disgruntled.
And Boris Diaw. Yeah, we did. You can't really root for them. I think they're also a very good team to watch. They're not that sexy. They play defense. They pass the ball. They don't have any one superstar that wows the crowd and gets everyone going ooh and ah. Rudy Gobert is great to watch, but no, you just can't root for him because of the former Suns on there.
Gordon Hayward makes the ladies ooh and ah. Have you seen that hairdo and how he's bulked up? Don't discredit Gordon Hayward with the ladies in Utah.
Oh, Captain America out there.
I mean, Greg makes a great point. Gordon Hayward is one sexy man. I mean, I got to tell you this. That guy.
Because I think Tim looks like the Walmart version of Gordon Hayward, so that's why he's saying this. They have the same hairdo, and he's about 50 pounds lighter, so that's why Dave is agreeing, ooh, or Tim's ooh, agreeing with me on ooh, this.
You know, I wonder, I've also thought, Tim, that you look a lot like Where's Waldo? Do you wear those shirts around?
I do, actually. I have the shirt in my closet and the hat in my dresser. I can put it on, but I've already done my hair.
You don't need Halloween to wear those.
I have done it for Halloween, yeah. I have some glasses that fit it and everything. I don't think, though, I guess I should reword that. If you're talking about teams to root for, I agree with you, Greg, that it's got to be the Raptors, because I think that P.J. Tucker really deserves our support. Have you guys been following P.J. Tucker on social, on Instagram, on I think he's just on Instagram, actually. I don't believe he's on Twitter since he left the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, I've been following. I saw a photo of him yesterday getting a tattoo. I really hope he didn't do that yesterday, because that seems like, and I'm not tatted, so if you guys have tats, you probably need to answer this for me. But I can't imagine doing that a day before a playoff game would be the smartest thing, because I'd imagine that area is a little raw and a little sore if you just got a tattoo.
Well, he's a beast.
Yeah, Greg, you know, I got to say, if you don't have tattoos, and I don't either, I don't think you're allowed to call them tats. I think you have to call them the full word, tattoo.
Talking about the Raptors playoff series, though, with the Bucks really quickly. You know, Raptors having won 13 of the last 15 contests. They won the season series 3-1. The only game that they lost was the one that Chris Middleton played for the Bucks. Kind of a coming out party for Giannis. But I expect to see a lot of P.J. Tucker on Giannis and Chris Middleton throughout the series.
Yeah, that's going to be really fun to watch. I can't wait to see playoff Giannis. I think Giannis is a great example of a player that came in with tons of physical gifts and really grew into being an actual NBA player. And now he may end up being an MVP one year. So I think Giannis is really fun to watch. PJ Tucker is great on defense against big guys like that, because what he does is he gets into their legs, he gets low, and he doesn't let them get their balance, which really helps keep people off their game. I'm not sure if he'll be able to succeed on that with Giannis as much as we all want him to, but it'll be really, really fun to watch those guys play against each other.
I want to know, what's the over-under on flagrant fouls and altercations that P.J. Tucker gets in the playoffs? I think it's got to be 4.5, and I'm going over, because I think P.J. is going to be so amped up and playing such tough and close defense that he's going to get under the skin of a lot of guys, Giannis included.
Are you guys surprised? Because I've seen a bunch of ballots out for the award voting. Obviously, the results aren't going to be released until June 26th, but I haven't seen a lot of P.J. Tucker on any all-defensive teams, and I don't really understand why.
That's because he was lost in obscurity for two-thirds of the season in Phoenix. Nobody saw it, and when you're on a team that's winning, you know, 23 games, you're not going to get a lot of attention for postseason awards. Another guy that I think deserves some attention for most improved player is Alan Williams. He went from human pom-pom to double-double machine. I think he at least deserves some consideration. I doubt he'll get any, though.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of second-year players winning most improved because they're supposed to improve in their second year. And so for the same reason, I don't think Devin Booker should be a finalist on most improved player either, even though he did lead the league in point differential and points per game this year versus last year. So definitely, you know, in that context, he should be considered for most improved. But I'm not a big fan of second-year players because they're finally getting their opportunity and being showcased. So someone like a Giannis that we just talked about a little while ago, I think he is more of a candidate for most improved.
I mean, to your point, Espo, about the, because he was on an obscure team, I've seen a lot of votes for Robert Covington over with the Sixers, though.
Yeah, but the Sixers got a lot of attention. They're a major East Coast media market. A lot of people watched because of Joel Embiid early in the season. I mean, give me one reason a national media person who's voting on these awards would have watched the Suns. The only way they would have is, A, if they have a favorite team like a Bill Simmons and they watched when they played the Celtics, or they were playing some top-tier team. There's just no reason that these guys would have watched P.J. Tucker with the Suns. Now, I think he's going to get a lot of attention in Toronto moving forward, and if he re-signs there, maybe next year he's in the discussion. But I don't see it because of just the fact that there's bias. Let's be honest in this voting, and if you're not a team that people watch a lot, you're likely not going to get any of these votes.
And you are listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns show. Greg Esposito, Dave King, my name is Tim Tompkins. You can follow us on Twitter at Suns Solar Panel. So let me toss this to you guys. What grade would you give the Suns overall for this season?
I would actually give the Suns an A. And here, let me tell you why. I'm not saying that they had a great season, because they obviously did not. But coming into the season, this season was going to be about positioning for one more high draft pick in a great draft, and play the rookies, play the young guys, get everyone experience, evaluate who you think might fit into your future. The only person we didn't get a good read on this year was Dragan Bender. And that's just because he had an injury right in the middle of the year, just as playing time was opening up. And he had a guy ahead of him, Marquese Chriss, who was just a little bit more ready for the minutes that were there in the front court early in the season for a young player. So that's the only one we didn't really get a great read on, was Dragan. But the rest of them, we saw everything we wanted to see and more. And I think that's what made for a great season. So I'd give the Suns an A, maybe an A minus. They didn't win the first overall pick yet, but now it's just up to, you know, lottery balls and all that. But they did everything they could, and they finished out the season strong.
Oh, guess what? When I grade things, just like when I look at the NBA playoffs, I have a specific way I go about it, and I call it the Nick Cage spectrum. And I grade everything on the Nick Cage spectrum, where you look at Nick Cage's movies and you compare it to whatever you're grading, seeing as Nick Cage has gone from top quality to bottom of the barrel in his career and everything in between. And I give the Phoenix Suns this year a Wicker Man with a side of Drive Angry. Now, let me explain this. Neither of these were good movies. You wouldn't want to watch them over and over and over again on a yearly basis, but you do find portions of it highly entertaining, like Nick Cage's head being stuck in a cage full of bees, or Nick Cage driving a car with the doors open, shooting people while he's a half-dead person back from hell. I mean, there's entertaining elements, but in the end, it's kind of trash. And that's the way I look at the Suns season. Whenever you finish with the second worst record in the NBA, it's not something you'd want to live again and live through. But there were moments that were highly entertaining. I mean, our Nick Cage's head in a cage of bees was Devin Booker's 70-point game. You're never going to forget that. That image will forever be with you, and you enjoyed it, and you will continue to enjoy it whenever it's mentioned. You know, I think that's the way I look at it. There were moments that were good, were entertaining, but if I have to live through another season where the Phoenix Suns are the second worst team in the NBA, it's going to get on my nerves. I know and I understand why we went through this process this year. I think it benefits the Suns for the future. But if they're not better next year, if they're not closer to that 40-win mark, and we haven't seen major improvement and reason for hope, it's not going to be pretty. That's when things get immensely frustrating, because we bought into a plan, we understood it this year, but it needs to get better next year. So I give them the Wicker Man with a side of Drive Angry grade this year.
I'm not sure that I can really agree with either of you. Dave with the A, I can't give the season an A. And then Espo saying that we all bought into it. I think at the beginning of the year, at least for a lot of Suns fans, that we felt like, you know, this team was going to be all right. You know, we had some starters between Eric Bledsoe and Tyson Chandler. Jared Dudley had come back. Leandro Barbosa was back. And I felt like it was possible that a lot of Suns fans, as well as maybe even management, even though they did underspend, kind of thought, you know what, this team could be a 500 team at the end of the day. And so I'm not sure that we bought into it until we realized how god-awful the team was. To me, the first part of the season was just filled with disappointment, irritated about lineups and who was and wasn't playing, namely Dragan Bender. And the second half of the season was a bit better. But to me, it's a solid C at best.
But look, I think to your point about expectations early in the season, if they didn't bench veterans starting in February, I think you get the kind of season you were expecting in terms of they were all right. They're probably low to mid 30s in wins, and you go, okay, well, they were good but not great and not good enough to be in the playoff discussion. I think everybody bought in terms of, at some point, the best course of action was to tank rather than be mediocre, because it didn't benefit anybody for the Suns to finish as the 9th, 10th, 11th best team in the Western Conference. That's where I'm coming from. I expected if they played the veterans, they would be okay, nothing special. I don't think anybody was really kidding themselves that playoffs were a real option this year, regardless of what Earl Watson or Ryan McDonough may have said in their exit interviews earlier this week. What I'm saying is, at some point, fans bought in that tanking was the best course of action, and a majority of fans, I think, did.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to do a quick lookup for my season prediction on a win total, and I can't find it right away, but I'm pretty sure that I remember being more on the under 30 side on my win prediction than I was on the over 30 side. I know a lot of people thought maybe the Suns, everything could break right and the Suns could be competitive and fight for a playoff berth, but I never really thought that was going to happen. I really thought the season was going to play out the way it did. There were extremes that I wasn't expecting. I didn't expect PJ Tucker to be playing second, third most minutes on the team in late December. For a team that was already fourth worst or fifth worst in the league. I didn't expect Tyson Chandler to have so many minutes. But I did expect those guys to have minutes and big minutes in the fall. I didn't expect Tyler Ulis to be playing 40 minutes a game for the last month of the season. And I didn't expect Devin Booker to still be, you know, leading the team in minutes as well that late in the season. I thought there would be a lot more balance on the minutes all year long. And then eventually you'd see the uptick in the young guys playing in the spring for sure. So there were a little bit more extremes than I expected, but the season went exactly as I thought it was going to. And all the preseason predictions on the Suns winning 24 to 26 to 28 games were spot on for a good reason, because the Suns had so many young guys and their old guys are role players. You're not gonna win a bunch of games that way. No matter what anybody thinks might happen, and the season proved itself out. So I thought the worst thing that could happen is the Suns end up with a 6, 7, 8, 9 pick in the draft, or that they somehow push themselves into the 10th or 12th pick in the draft. That was the last thing I wanted to happen. So when I saw the Suns going for it finally in the second half, although they did it on the extreme level that no team has done in recent history, I thought it was the right move, and I still think it's the right move, and they got exactly what they wanted out of it. Now it's just up to chance on how good that pick is.
And if you listen to the commissioner this week, they may have finally fixed tanking for everybody in the NBA, because the commissioner said it was disgusting this year, basically, and that they're going to address it in the offseason. So,
I mean, they said
Which means the Suns will wind up with the 5th pick. You realize if these draft lotteries are rigged, we will get punished for what happened.
We are PHX.
And you are listening to the Phoenix Suns Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns show. You can follow us individually on Twitter, Greg at Espo, Dave King at Dave King NBA, and you can follow myself at Radio Tim NBA. Talking about your mailbag questions, we get a couple from you guys this week. Let's start this off with 53rd Calypso over on Reddit says, are there any plans to be competitive in re-signing Alex Lynn if another team makes a big offer for him in free agency?
I think, sure hope not.
Yeah, I agree. I think Ryan McDonough kind of gave it away a little bit in the exit interview the other day when asked about Alex Lynn. He said, look, there were some positives and there were some negatives and there were some good games and there were some bad games. That doesn't sound like the description a GM is going to give a guy he's willing to give $18 to $20 million a year to. I think Alex Lynn will find some team that will want to give him that money, and the Suns are not going to want to give him that kind of money themselves. So I do think Alex Lynn goes to another team this year. The worst case scenario for Alex and the Suns is that he doesn't get the offers because I think the Suns do want to let it out there that they're not going to match. I really do think the Suns will set it up where everybody and their brother thinks the Suns are just going to let them go for a good offer, because you don't want to tamp down some other team's offer because they think they're just wasting 3 days of their time. So I think the rumor is going to get out there. The Suns are going to let him go. Worst case is nobody makes an offer anyway, and the Suns, he either takes the Suns qualifying offer or the Suns sign him for something more reasonable, which that part wouldn't be the worst case. But I think the worst case would be he'd be in a position to have to take a qualifying offer, or the Suns be in a position to have to withdraw that so that they don't have to bring him back. I think they'd rather have Alan Williams back, although that's not going to be an $8 million a year figure, I really don't think. They went from Alan Williams not even being in the league a year ago and being in shape enough to even finish an NBA workout to suddenly, is he worth $10 million a year? I don't think the Suns want to go that far with him. I wouldn't be surprised if the Suns go a totally different direction at center, even for an interim, or they just draft somebody in the second round that can play center, or sign a journeyman to fill in behind Tyson Chandler and just hold that spot to see if Marquise Chris or Dragan Bender could fit in that role going forward.
Thai Mirage asks, is Ulis a starter, or does he have the potential to be a starter in this league?
How many times do we have to answer this question on this show? I think Tyler Ulis is a backup in the long run. He's going to be a great back. I mean, maybe a sixth man kind of guy on a team, but I don't think he's ever going to be a starter in this league. He got inflated minutes because he was playing, or inflated stats because he was playing minutes without a lot of talent around him on a team that was tanking. He's a good player, pretty good on the defensive end of the ball, has great court vision, and I think his size will always play a factor in his ability to start in this league.
Yeah, I agree with Greg. I think I see him as an ideal backup for a team, and I think he's going to have a nice long career as an ideal backup because he's going to look good when he starts. He's going to look good in his backup minutes. He's going to play extra hard. The fewer minutes he plays, the harder he's going to play. And he's always going to produce, and he's always going to look good while he's doing it, and his teammates will look good. He does make his teammates better. His biggest problem is his size. He just doesn't have the size to make it as a full-time starter in the league and not get abused by the point guards that are in this league today. I would love it if Tyler develops into that kind of player, but he's not there yet, and he doesn't really show signs of being a long-term 82 games a year starter for a playoff caliber team.
I have to echo both of your sentiments. And thank you so much for listening to the Solar Panel of Phoenix Suns Show, part of Almighty Baller Radio. You can find us on Twitter as well as Facebook at Sun Solar Panel. You can follow Dave King on Twitter at Dave King NBA. You can follow Greg at Espo. You can follow myself at Radio Tim NBA. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really does help out the show more than you know. And thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next week.